There were certainly a lot of bills that went into effect, I should say laws that went into effect, on July 1st. And certainly one that caught a lot of people's attention were the video surveillance was being installed at absentee ballot drop boxes across the state. And we thought this is a great opportunity, of course, to check in with the Secretary of the State, but also to talk about other pieces of legislation all having to do with election security and just our elections in general in Connecticut. So we welcome back Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas, who is here. And let's go to the, I would say, something that certainly sparked a lot of feedback from Connecticut residents, which had to do with the recording absentee ballot boxes. Now, this was something, correct me if I'm wrong, Secretary of the State, welcome back. This was actually something that passed last year, right?
That's correct. And good morning. Happy to be here as always. That's correct. Usually for many election laws, especially if it's something that has to roll out across all of our 169 towns, there's usually a 6 month to 1 year buffer to give towns time to budget for it and also to implement. So this passed last year and it went into effect July 1.
And of course, the question, Secretary of the State, that we get from, and understandably so, only because it was right here in our listening area, Bridgeport, where we saw, misuse of certainly stuffing ballot boxes in 2023 during the primary for the mayoral election. The question is, why invest the money in having surveillance cameras put in? Why not just eliminate the absentee ballot drop boxes?
There's a few reasons. One, I talked about this a lot last year when this case was unfolding. Several of the exact same people were alleged to have done the exact same thing before Connecticut ever had drop boxes. So I would posit that it's not necessarily a drop box problem, but a specific problem related to the same people receiving these allegations. And what most people don't realize is that many towns, when they put up the drop boxes, they added them in areas where they already had surveillance. And it's, in fact, the fact that we had a drop box in Bridgeport with the surveillance camera that enabled us to get that footage and move the case forward last year, whereas the 2019 case had stalled out for a bit for lack of very clear and compelling evidence.
Do you feel like the ballot boxes are necessary?
I believe they are. I remember even before I became secretary and I was a state representative, I remember in particular when I was out door knocking, quite a few like seniors and caregivers, etc., cited how important and how transformative the drop boxes were during COVID. One story in particular, I remember it was a daughter who was caring for her mother, who was ambulatory, but not like at the level of being able to go to a polling location and walk down the hallway. And she was like, my mother is so happy now that I can drive her to the drop box and like she can see it dropped off. And that hadn't been possible prior to the drop boxes. And that's just one example. I think it's not the drop boxes, but you want to make sure the system is as secure as possible.
And again, we have the Secretary of the State here, Stephanie Thomas, on election security. I want to get to, there were actually a lot of bills in regards to our elections and our security. Now, the election monitor for Bridgeport, I know that's not a new piece of legislation, but there was an extension of the monitor program. And I believe I heard that there was going to be a new public education campaign for voters. That's something you've talked about doing for a long time.
Yeah, as you know, I have been very vocal about saying that we need money committed to public education for everybody. Many people don't realize election laws change from year to year. You know, a lot of people don't realize that the way they voted when they were 18 perhaps has changed. And as a result, some people are misled and are. Some people make mistakes, which could be illegal. So when we were in Bridgeport in 2023 and 2024, one of the things I had hoped to do was to conduct a public education campaign, a bilingual one in particular, because in a lot of states, other people can drop off your absentee ballots. It's not illegal. In Connecticut, it happens to be limited to certain members of the family or like a registrar or a police officer. But a lot of people didn't realize that because like neighbors and people in the community had been dropping it off for them for decades. So I thought we need to short circuit that with a public education campaign. So I made that suggestion. And although I did not get funding for a statewide campaign, I am able to use some of the Bridgeport Election Monitor dollars for a campaign in Bridgeport. So I'm very happy about that because we need more whistleblowers to, you know, keep bringing light to some of the situations that have been alleged there.
No question. And Bridgeport continues to be, as you mentioned, a place where this has been a problem. But I mean, to your earlier point, Secretary of the State, I'm curious if we, and I know that this has been controversial as well, but you know, the same few people that their names continuously come up, you know, and not only don't really face any, you know, backlash for it or any punishment, if you will, but almost get rewarded. I mean, the one that stands out to me is Wanda Jeter Pataki, the fact that she still got to be vice chair of the Democratic Party in Bridgeport. I'm not sure if anything had passed this year or went into effect in regards to that. And I don't want to say blocking people, but it's like once you've committed election fraud or cases where it has been proven that you've done something wrong, I think stripping people of even having that, I'm not saying you got to go to jail per se. I mean, it is a crime, but I guess almost like a compromise, which is, you know, do you get stripped of having the right to be so involved with elections? I feel like that's not right.
There are laws on the books already. So obviously, election fraud, there are crimes, there are criminal statutes that could result in jail time up to 5 years per incident, fines up to $5,000 per incident. So all of that is already on the books and left to a court of law. If you're talking, and there are laws on the books about if you've been convicted of an election-related crime, that restricts you from performing certain jobs or responsibilities in the election space. When you're talking about town committees, that is party rules outside of the jurisdiction of the Secretary of the State's office, where Title IX only. So I'm not sure off the top of my head, but there may be something on their books as well.
Let's also talk about curbside voting. You know, certainly for people who feel like we're just coming up with so many different ways for people to vote and get access to voting, I want to talk about, I think, the uniqueness of this, certainly, but also for those who worry, you know, could there be a loophole or a way for more fraud to happen? This one, I think, is a unique situation.
Yeah, so we've been, you know, laws get passed every year to tighten security. You know, whenever a situation, if anyone spots a loophole, we close it. So curbside voting has been on the books for a very long time. And I think people already know that, they didn't know that was part of the problem. So curbside voting was only for people with a temporary incapacity. So imagine you broke your leg on Monday and you have to go vote on Tuesday and you can't easily get out of your car. But what was happening, people with a longer term incapacity were using curbside voting. Imagine you're 93 years old and you can't walk very easily, but you want to go in person. Someone like that might have used curbside voting inappropriately. So one tweak was made to the law to conform it with how people have been using it. So it no longer has to be a temporary incapacity. It can just be an incapacity. But more importantly, most towns, their early voting location was at town hall. And in many of those cases, where they had to hold curbside voting did not fall within the 75-foot rule that we're all used to at our regular polling place at Election Day, usually at a school. Curbside voting is right out front, and there's no what they call electioneering allowed. So like a candidate can't like be talking to you about their campaign, etc., within that 75-foot rule. But we found with early voting, we had a few instances where a candidate approached a car who was doing curbside voting because it was outside of that 75-foot radius. Mm. So this law creates a radius around the vehicle.
Got
so
it.
A candidate can't approach the driver, they can't get inside the car, things like that. I think it's a great fix.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, it definitely clarifies things as well. And again, we have Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas here. A lot of other election bills I want to get to. Fully funding for the Connecticut Voting Rights Act seems like a pretty big deal.
Yes. So it had been funded through the American Rescue Plan, but that funding ran out and it would have had to stop if we hadn't received additional funding. So the legislature funded it, which was great because it was just passed in 2022, I believe, or 2021. So we are still in the process of rolling it out. So I'm very grateful to them for passing the funding because we have already hired people responsible for rolling out the program. So I'm glad we don't have to say goodbye to them.
And it didn't seem like, is that an awful lot of money?
I'm trying to remember offhand. Sorry, you stumped me.
No,
I don't remember.
I feel
but
like it was like roughly, what, $1 million? A year to operate, I think.
Exactly. Okay. It wasn't a huge amount, no.
Okay. No, I was just curious because you know that's going to be a question I get, which is, well, how much is that
yes.
they're funding that? So I just wanted to make sure I had that number. The other thing, the voting tabulators. Now, you and I talked about this, when they were first, you know, approved, and then we started rolling them out. Wasn't there an issue, though, Secretary of the State, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but that these tabulators, after we just ordered them, may not have ended up being in compliance or something, or they were at risk of not being in compliance. So something happened there. I remember reading
about. There are two issues we talked about. With the Trump administration executive order, it calls for the agency who issues regulations around voting tabulators to they had just put out new regulations and our equipment was purchased in accordance with that.
Mm-hmm.
But they have been commanded to like sort of reopen the books and perhaps set new regulations. So every state across America is now worried that all of the equipment they have might be decertified. So we are still waiting for some information about that. There are a lot of court cases about it. So that's in flux.
Okay.
The other issue we had talked about, we had envisioned as last time we purchased equipment that when it was purchased, it would be gifted to the towns. And we had to make a slight tweak in the regulations to allow that to happen. But it did happen. The towns have them. I believe all but about 10 towns have now received their tabulators. Many Connecticut voters have used them already for town referenda. So we're in a great spot with that.
Okay, because it was like 2,700 of them. I remember you ordering them and everything.
Correct.
And I was like, wow, that's a lot of money. It was a lot. I mean, we needed
it. It's about $20 million. Yes.
A lot. Yeah. Hopefully they are still in compliance. Good grief. That's that could be stressful. So we'll see.
It would be a nightmare for America.
It would be a little bit of a nightmare. Just a little bit. Just a tad. The other thing, too, I really quickly want to get to as well is early voting. I know, are we still going to stick with what we did for early voting? I noticed early voting is also going to be on college campuses.
That's correct. So everything about early voting remains the same. No new laws were passed, although I do believe some will be taken up next session. Still 7 days for a primary, 14 days for a general. We'll still be using that envelope system of early voting. The one change that did occur, any public college that has 1,000 or more residential students are mandated to have an early voting location on campus. So right now in Connecticut, that would be five colleges or universities. But what remains to be seen, you'll definitely want to check with your college ahead of time. In order to have an early voting location, you also have to follow other state laws that require certain technology to be available, in particular, a secure line. So we are still in the process of making sure these colleges have that secure line. And if they do, they'll have an early voting location for this year's elections. If not, it'll push off until next year.
Okay.
Everything in election law is very complicated.
This is
why we need public education.
No question. And also, I got to get you back on to talk more about some of these things. I just appreciate even scratching the surface, and I would love to have you back on sooner rather than later.
Always.
Appreciate
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas right here on WICC.